We are not heroes, nor are we villains, neither kings nor magicians, but we can tell you their stories. We are the Lore Keepers, and we welcome you to Hallowmay.
Welcome to Hallowmay. You are listening to Lore Keepers, a world-building podcast where we talk about aeons of history, heroes and villains, and the legends they leave behind. I'm Carter.
And I'm Frank.
And whether you're interested in stories, looking for inspiration in your own world-building, or perhaps you want a piece of the action, we've got something for you.
Still such a good intro.
We are...
Wait, damn it! Ah, fuck!
This week, Frank is interrupting the intro.
And I was commenting on how good... I'm still interrupting. Keep going.
And we're going to be polishing off a rune with a discussion that is... Really, it's going to be about a variety of topics. So I don't know if I want to really just like close it off here, but I will say that it is going to be informed by Frank's completion of the Mistborn trilogy by Branderson.
I am complete.
Yeah. Before we get to that, Frank, how you doing?
Well, I'm doing pretty good. I was telling Carter who had to suffer through Frank delaying the recording of a already late in the evening podcast because we finally finished this piece of furniture that we've been doing, this hutch. I think I showed you the hutch that was full of liquor.
Yeah, the hutch full of clutch.
Mm-hmm. So we stripped it down completely down to the wood, which took literally, I think, a weekend and several evenings to strip all of that off using a belt sander, a random orbital sander, and like a shit ton of sandpaper. It is hard. It is so fucking hard to do, dude. It takes so long. We did that. Then we primed it. Then we did... two coats of paint, and then we did two coats of finish paint, and then we as well as doing touch-ups in there.
You imported that from Finland?
We did three coats of a polyurethane finish. It has taken us 3 weeks now of basically non-stop in our free time like activity. Well, over the course of 3 weeks, because last weekend Rachel's family was in town, and so it was, you know, there was more being busy about that, getting her sister ready for college. So yeah, that was nuts. But I just finished like 10 or 15 minutes ago, and I'm like, finally, it feels good. So
now the cats can destroy it.
Uh-huh. Yep. Yeah, the cats can just tear the shit out of it. Yeah, no, technically we can't put anything on it for like 3 days as the finish sets. Nothing can touch it. We're just going to move it tonight from out there into the office here. And then that I think that should be that. But yeah. So I don't know. That's what I got up to. What have you been up to, man? How is life?
Everything's
what is life right now for you?
I think all my classes are online at this point.
That's good. I'm glad.
It is good. Yeah. There's actually some protests that were going on by students who like laid... as if they were dead in front of the president's house.
Wow. Seriously?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
It's great.
Dude, that's protest. That's crazy. I mean, that's a good protest. Solid. I mean, yeah, University of Michigan also protesting right now. All the grad students have been. Yeah, they've been protesting, like doing any work because they're really unhappy with several things that the college has been doing. One of which is like police action and the fact that they use Ann Arbor police force
don't have their own police force.
Well, that's the problem. Part of it is their own police force, and then the other part is the contract. They just want to reduce, like, a significantly reduce the police presence. You know, they want to defund, but like the likelihood of that happening is basically zero. So, Anyways.
But yeah, it's everything's good. I'm glad to be online.
Yeah. You playing any good games lately or watch anything or?
I haven't had having a bit of trouble with the Plex recently, Frank.
That makes sense. There's been a lot of on and off with it. We finally got a person to come to our goddamn house to fix our goddamn internet once and for all. They finally fixed it. And then once they did, the IP pass through for the Plex was reset. So I had to go through the day a day later and do like beep, port forwarding, etc. I guess I'll have to just, I have no idea if it's important that people know that it's 32.4. Damn it. But like that port that I mentioned twice. But I think it should be working now.
I was still having some trouble. It said it couldn't like fetch the content or there's no content to be played.
This evening?
Yes.
Okay. When were you doing it? A couple hours ago?
Yeah.
Okay.
Should have been around seven.
Around seven? We had an internet outage right around then.
Okay.
So that might have explained it. We had to reset everything. I love our Google or our AT&T fiber. It's so flawless. Everything is great about it. It's just the best. Dude, we're supposed to get gigabit Ethernet. And we don't. We don't even get close. Most of the time because our service just hangs. That's great. I think we finally fixed everything, though. So, I don't know. That's if good. You try loading things right now, it should be fine. Like, literally as we're speaking.
Sure, I will try it.
And actually, if it's not, please tell me because there shouldn't be any more problems. And if there are, I'll have to figure out what is going on.
It's working. All right.
Good. Thank God. I'm sorry for the downage. I have been paying attention to the list as well. I think I don't know if you what you added.
Because there goes that juicy audio.
Yeah, I know. It's really I can't use my knees and I can't wiggle my legs. I think I might need to get a shock mount. Because I can't wiggle my legs around. I have restless leg, you know, and I can't wiggle them around this tripod.
You seem to constantly tense your thighs so they don't move.
Just kegels, but like thigh kegels. Thegels?
There you go. Nice job, Frank.
I think thegels is probably the note through which we should start the podcast proper, yeah?
Yeah, okay.
All right. I figured you'd be proud of me, you know? Okay, yeah, we're all right. So we're going to get into the podcast proper now. As Carter was mentioning, this is it, y'all. This is the big episode. This is the one we've been talking about for a few months now because it takes me fucking forever to read anything. First, Carter has to basically plead me to do something. And then when I finally do it, I'm like sending him clapping gifs of the end of Napoleon Dynamite because I was like so just awed by the ending of the book. It's such my kind of fantasy. Dude, you hit the nail on the head.
You like? I'm telling you, you'll like Branderson if you just gotta give him a chance.
Yeah, I mean, I like plenty of stuff. I actually started the fifth season recently, and damn, dude, N.K. Jemisin is legendary, and the way that she writes is so different. It's almost it's very prosaic, I guess would be the word. I don't know if that's the word properly, but like it's like poetry. But written in prose, you know, her cadence and things doesn't follow conventional English, but it's not like not legible or whatever. It's just very aware of you as the reader. And I think if I remember what Rachel was saying, it might be part of the book is written in second person, which is interesting. Like things are happening to you and you are the main character and stuff. That might be a different book, though. But we're not here to talk about the fifth season or N.K. Jemisin, despite how very good that book is so far. We're talking about Mistborn. So, yes, we're talking about it. We're going to be spoiling things, like everything, potentially. I fully intend to talk about stuff that happens in book three. This is your warning. If you are ever at any point planning on reading that book or whatever, do not do yourself a disservice. I think that the book can be read without, like, with some spoilage knowledge and still enjoy it, but I strongly would recommend against it. I think it's just a better read with the twists and turns that it takes.
And I will, as a PSA, say that we won't be discussing anything about the Alloy of Law series, which is set
right, which I've also started.
You've also started that. We might be spoiling that, though.
No. I only got a couple of minutes into it. Okay. Like maybe half an hour of audiobook. I just realized I had it, and I was like, well, might as well.
So it's got guns, y'all.
It's got guns. That's all I can say, because that's basically all I know. I'm like the equivalent of like three pages in or something.
But you saw Wax used in.
Wax?
Maybe not.
Is that his name? Is that the main character's name?
I think so.
Okay, yeah, I haven't gotten far enough to like really. Somebody was like shooting at him, and then it turns out that they're friend or something like that, I think. I'm not really sure. Or
okay,
companion.
Well, don't worry.
So I'm not very far at all. But I've got my highball with me. Carter is on the other end of the call. Dude. So all of this relates, as we get into it now properly, all of this relates to this big question of the forgetting and what is the forgetting. And I don't know about you, Carter, but I've been feeling like a storm brewing of thoughts and associations with. We have all these different very interesting loose ends, and I can feel them drawing closer together as we have gotten closer to this as a. So, you know, we'll see how climactic this is. But just to recap, like the giants and their runes, the fact that they were created as sort of a precursor to free will, the six elements, the corruption and all that the corruption is, the potential for quirks, and we've lightly talked about them, but this episode, it sounds like Carter has some capital I ideas about how the corruption, or not the corruption, how quirks or whatever we call them connect to all these other concepts. And then the forgetting, which is a biggie. It's one that we've never really talked about in detail, but is essentially the idea that there is a cognitive ceiling that one generation experienced that became the floor for another. Or not even generation, but just like an event happened and everybody forgot everything. It was like mass amnesia. So yeah, Carter, we've got a lot in this basket. I don't know if there was anything particularly that you wanted to start with, but I figured I'd rescind the floor to you now that I've monologued for a couple
of minutes. I wanted to start with kind of why I got you to read the book, and then I wanted to talk about quirks.
It's a great place to start. Let's do that.
So I wanted you to read the books of Mistborn because we had this idea about forgetting that I was pulling from Mistborn for it, and I'm like, I don't want to spoil Mistborn because it's a great series of books.
Yeah, totally.
I want you to read it because they're awesome. But I still want to take from there. And so in Mistborn, there's this idea that information can be manipulated if it's written down.
Right.
And there's this idea that the certain divine beings can speak to people if they have certain conditions fulfilled.
Oh, shit. Yeah. What do they call it? Hemallergy,
I think.
Well, so there's ferrochemy, allomancy, and hemallergy. Yep, that's what it is, because each of them has a different suffix. I remember that much.
Hemallergy
is super interesting.
It's really fucking cool, because it's the kind of metal spike is in you changes what power you get.
So you get a metal spike in your body.
Yeah, and also where the metal spike goes.
Didn't they say there was over like 200 points in the body where the metal spike could be?
I think so, yeah.
Also, how did Marsh die? Can you remind me? For real, like in the final book. Like, I'm trying to remember if he was part of that climactic battle at the very, very end, or if he was part of all the others when they evacuated, which was such an incredible scene, when they had evacuated Luthadel, and it was... All of the other.
This is all I'm gonna say, Frank. We never saw Marsh die.
Oh, huh. Okay. All right. Well, that's ominous. I'll take it.
Anyway,
that's
so
also surprising.
So what I'm getting at here is that when I think of Ruin, which is one of the divinities in.
On a cosmological scale, it's an element that comes into play at the end of the second book and in the third book. It's this concept of literally like a force.
Well, it's more than just a concept; it's a person,
right? It's an individual. They have a personhood, but they also kind of represent the control of and the operation of the force of ruin, the idea that things break down, they fall apart.
And I think it kind of lost its they lost their individuality as they were ruin.
Right. Well, and like also because
was gone.
They very lightly, Sanderson very lightly touches on this, but the idea that preservation and ruin is a duality that's actually meant to exist within one person and be controlled and harnessed by one person, and that something happened in the past that went wrong, and these two sort of opposing forces, preservation and ruin, were at odds with each other when they were really supposed to be sort of like held in the left and right hand.
And used as creation.
Right, yes.
So when I thought about this, you know, corruptive force, I was thinking a little bit of ruin as this force that has a kind of, it's kind of minded, but it's so primal.
Totally.
That it's kind of lost its individuality.
I can totally see the connection there, yeah.
Yeah, and then I want it to be this kind of whispering in the mind. But I want it to be slightly less like it's a person talking to you and more like, you know, it's like a thousand voices saying similar things.
Are there stronger and weaker voices?
Probably.
Okay. I really like that.
But allow me to continue, Frank.
Yeah, yeah, keep going.
And I think so there's a couple things I want to push for here. That was one of the big ones, which is just ruin as a corruption, or the corruption as ruin in a comparison or an analogy. And then the other thing is about quirks, which is, this might come as a little bit of a surprise, but we talked about how quirks, everyone has one, or like, you know, almost everyone. It's like 99.9%. But they're of differing strengths and of differing, you know, actuality, what they actually do, their abilities, what they grant you, very, very different.
Yeah, we talked a while ago in an episode about the idea of like sort of power scaling, and that some people might have a much longer road, but it takes longer to walk down than other people. And so they might reach the limits of their power. They might have a much longer tail on the top end of what they're capable of, but it might take their entire life to reach that, whereas another, and like much more slowly, whereas another person might access all of their power, you know, kind of when they have their quickening or whatever that event is where it gets activated. If we even need that. I know, I don't really remember where.
I think we still need it. I think it's still a cool and great idea. And I think there's something else I want to add on to that, which is,
okay,
as we said before, the quirks all come from interaction with the corruption.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
And so in some sense, I want to say everyone has a little bit of corruption. Everyone has a little tiny bit, whether it's in the food they eat or, you know, the water they drink, they got it in them somehow.
Sort of either through, because the thing is like, this is sort of like Mistborn, where everybody has a little bit of metal in their bodies.
Yes.
But it's also, I would compare it to the, this is a season one spoiler for The Walking Dead, which is like, if you're feeling like that's spoiled, I think it's been out for like 12 years and who gives a fuck? Which is that everybody is infected with the zombie virus. If you die, you're guaranteed to become a zombie. It's not something where it's like it's only if you're bitten. It is that everybody is carrying it around. It's nascent in you at all times. And I kind of like the idea that this corruption is this vectorized thing that either, yeah, whether it's through the food that you eat or whatever, because it doesn't spread in the conventional ways that a disease does. It spreads similarly, but through different vectors. It's not just like airborne or whatever. It needs, I think, anima? Is that what we decided? Is that it's associated with anima?
I think it is associated with anima, but it can affect the soul through the binding agent between the anima and the soul.
Okay. Yep. Yeah.
And this is why it's present in the vest, like you often see it change animals, is because animals are anima. But
yeah. And oftentimes they have a more like the type of anima that they have is much less balanced with a soul. Like, you know, most animals, I think, I'm pretty sure we've left off basically saying that animals don't have souls. They have an anima core. that drives instinct in things, and that only mortal creatures, you know, the knowing, have souls. And so they don't have that balance, and maybe that plays a part in also their susceptibility to the corruption, like taking over, whereas maybe the soul can like fight back or something like that,
yeah,
or at least tries to keep it away.
And so
keep going.
I then want to make my move, which is, we talked about how there's this power scaling and how that happens, and now people just, you know, by using their ability and, you know, practicing with it, they can become better. But that's in some part true, but what really happens, and what people just associate it with people getting better or people honing their skills, is that the more you interact with corruption, the more powerful your ability gets, the more powerful that reaction becomes, the more your quirk is manifested.
Okay.
And this is why it's really scary to fight the corruption when it has people fighting with it, is because they are incredibly powerful.
It's sort of almost like maybe, like it's distended their power, where it is stretched it beyond what a normal like living creature should be capable of. And that's what makes them so dangerous, is that like they have completely drawn in, or like, you know, have sucked dry the like the power, and it's almost like bloated them.
And I think one thing that we are struggling with is trying to figure out like how people can go to the corruption, or like what does it look like when someone is corrupted. And I think that when you were saying it, you know, it's taken their power too far, remember my analogy of the fever of the soul, right? The mechanism that fights the bacteria in the body.
Right, yeah.
And the soul.
I thought a lot about that.
Yeah. So this is where the fever's gone too far, and where they've literally lost their mind in some sense, because their soul has gone so haywire with this power.
Okay. Like maybe there's something in a mortal, a knowing person who they have, like there's maybe a bridging or something. Like the idea that the corruption can't normally interact with the soul. But if the soul is incapable of fighting back, or there's just an overwhelming presence of the corruption, it can reach a person's soul, sort of a la the bridge of the anima. I was kind of thinking about that. Or maybe it cuts them off. Maybe the soul is incorruptible. It can't be touched by the corruption. But maybe there's something to be said that there's like whatever thread or strand connects a person's soul to the corruption is severed, and kind of like the tension that we talk about, the soul becomes adrift and they lose like all of their personality and characteristics and become just sort of this very simplified creature that still has all of its knowledge, its rationale, its, you know, its sense of virtue, but that virtue also has been corrupted because, you know, like the things, as we've kind of talked about before, your Maslow's hierarchy essentially gets altered by the corruption, and becomes like your deepest need now.
Yeah, though I do think we could work with how I know that you like to draw some sort of difference between the soul and the spirit. So you could make the claim the spirit is incorruptible, and yet the soul is corruptible.
That could work too. Yeah, I'd play in that space.
So that's,
I don't know exactly where we'd land, but yeah, I could see that.
But I mean, that's just another option. I'm perfectly happy to go with the weird thread stuff.
Sure.
But so that's what I wanted to put on the table first. It's like, now we have a better understanding of what quirks are. They're an interaction between the soul and corruption. And corrupted people are frightening, not only because they are vessels of corruption, but they have terrifying power.
Yeah. Okay. I think we've laid down some patchwork there, and I want to return to that. But I think right now is sort of the time for founding things. And then we can start to draw the threads between them later, because I've definitely been thinking about this stuff too. And I want to see where we figure out where all this is connected. You know, I feel like there is an event or a story here. And I have a hypothesis, or maybe like a speculation, that I would say, about what happened or what sort of the theme is of what happened that would help to explain why Orun is so different from Everast and Tanatlohi and the rest of the known world. So I'd like to talk about the forgetting. And would you be cool just shifting over to that, and then we can bring those elements together?
Yes, but I have one question.
Mm-hmm.
Do we know where Orun is relative to Everast on Sadar?
It's east. It's the other large continent. It is east or west, depending on which direction you go. But it's the other, like, supercontinent. It's a portion of the other supercontinent, Kotara. So there's Umdara and Kotara. Umdara is the continent, the supercontinent that both Everast and Tanatlohi are part of, and then Kotara is the other one. There's also several other continental landmasses. There's, like, you know, some that are like Australia sized and some that are smaller and stuff, but those are kind of the two biggies.
Do we know, could it be on the opposite side of Sadar from the what's that sea called? The Inland Sea of Everest.
Oh, I could see that. It's about roughly halfway across the world. So I could see that if you were mapping that not Cartesian, but like on a globe.
Yeah.
I could see it being about there. Why? Did you have an idea about that?
Yes, I do.
You want to share it?
Okay, I'll be quick so we can get to your idea. But I just had this like weird moment. What do we know about that sea, Frank? What caused that sea?
Well, it was the moon Fenislil, the fourth moon sister, sacrificing her deity, her presence, and crashing into the Nameless One, or the physical embodiment of the Nameless One, to disrupt their power long enough to cease the Ash Curse event, allowing Own to basically alter their nature enough to throw them out of reality into the Howling Void.
Yes, and so I think this had an effect on Sadar. Interestingly enough, this throwing was both metaphysical and physical, such that there is a ripple effect that happened through the center and out the back end, which caused the chasm in Orun from which the dragons left from, the emerald dragons or the crystalline dragons. And I think that something, some possibly a, what do we call them, a dawn? I think they're called dawns,
the dusks?
Yeah, I think it's possible that a dawn, which is the good part, there's the dusks and the dawns.
Mm-hmm.
And a dusk is a fallen dawn.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's possible that there was a dawn or some kind of angelic being that was on the opposite side of Sadar, that was hit by this weird thing, that was somehow weirdly affected by it, that gave birth to the corruption. That's my pitch.
Okay. I think there's definitely something in there. I love, oh God, the mythos there of it literally being like somebody threw a spear through the heart of Sadar.
Yeah.
And that would be the, like, being the only way of killing the Nameless One. I love the mythos with that. And there's maybe there's a significant mountain range, especially one single mountain that is in the middle of landlocked Orun, dead in the center and has no right being there. Like, it doesn't make any sense, any like tectonic sense, because mountains only show up on the edges of plates, not in the centers of them. But what if, like, I mean, or maybe Orun is like a bunch of smaller plates now as a result or something like that. But yeah, I mean, like, just like thrown through and caused massive cataclysmic damage that actually pushed outwards and skewed the entirety of the planet slightly.
I think it might
be pretty cool.
It might be like a you know how you have a piece of wood and you were to hit the piece of wood with an axe and how it makes a cleft, and the cleft is like this, but there's a hole in the middle?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, like this.
Sure. Yeah.
Except more like this.
Uh-huh.
I think that might be what it looks like.
Okay. Interesting. I love the idea of tying it into the dragons. I think that's a really cool idea.
Because we know the dragons left the middle.
And we know specifically that they left through a rift in Orun.
Yep.
We even played with the idea of, like, what if there was this open maw somewhere in it to the depths of the core of the world? I still don't know how I feel about that one. I think maybe not.
Well, it could have collapsed.
Wait.
Hmm?
It probably did collapse. But that wouldn't change the fact that even over, I mean, tens of thousands of years is still nothing, a pittance in the age of a planet. That is like you got cut 3 seconds ago, 2 seconds ago. So I'm kind of playing with an idea of what if Orun is half of that land? Like, what if that cleft exists? And the southern edge of Orun, slightly south of the equator, is just straight up an open gorge that you can't see across. And it's just cool. Like this world-ending cliff. And then the sky just sort of fades into darkness on that edge. And some people live over there. I mean, maybe that's where masts started or something. Like, we've been playing with the idea of sort of just having a massive... Anyways, but like, if you had that... Then Orun is on one side. You could have the roof of the world or something, and it's a mountain range that follows along the edge of that chasm that is literally like miles tall, like as in you can't climb it because there's no atmosphere at the top.
Oh, the Bjorn
mountains. It goes so high that. Yeah, that's what I'm drawing it from. Like the idea of what is it called? Is it Farvinjur that has the mountain that's so tall and is like a caldera, and so there's like a giant open hole in it. Yeah. We're drawing in some Aragon inheritance series here. I think, is Farthingir the one that is the tallest, or is that a different one?
I don't know if it's the tallest.
But whatever the case, literally you have these mountains and they say that the world ends on the other side of these mountains, and they protect us from the world, you know, from like falling off the edge of the world or something like that. And maybe there are some nomadic tribes somewhere along there that actually live and regularly have these very narrow passages. And they actually, I don't know, maybe they mine on the side of it or something on the far side in the maw. But on the other side is another whole continent that is like a separate evolution that is completely cut off from the rest of this. And then you can have these massive oceanic waterfalls on the ends. I don't exactly know how that works in terms of like filling it up and not, but I could see something like underground rivers or whatever. We already know that the world is pocked, you know, on the interior, so that water could run off and then go through explosive steam vents somewhere else or something. Anyways, I think that's a really cool idea.
All right, well, that is what I wanted to share, so now we can get back to your thing with the forgetting.
Really cool idea. Okay, so I'm kind of thinking if this event did happen, or it happened specifically this way, we're enhancing it, then the forgetting is a separate event in an entirety.
Of course, yes.
Because I think... I've been playing around with a lot of stuff, and one of these things Carter and I sort of had a back and forth about, which I think he has less... He's got questions about it and is maybe skeptical about it, which I totally understand. And I'll bring that in a second. But with everything that we've been talking about, with the giants and their runes, which I think is sort of an early version of language and the idea of written language, I think that maybe that it didn't exist before them, and that any version of Ignin or primordial script that exists, or ethereal script, which actually I don't know if... I will say, I don't know if there's canon that ethereals have their own script, like celestials, I mean. I do think we could obviously do our own thing with that. Due to related things, but whatever, we'll get to that. But ultimately, my thought process here is the giant runes, the fact that the development of free will is a thing, and the fact that the corruption has... like an awareness and stuff. I was wondering, what if a force, maybe it's the wild gods, maybe it's remnants of the giants for some reason, maybe it's the dragons, one of those very powerful groups or individual people among those powerful groups made the forgetting happen for a reason. And the thing that I was rolling around in my head as a possible explanation for the forgetting is, what if the wild gods did it? Because the corruption was gaining awareness of itself and intent, and like it was developing and hijacking intellect from the from the knowing, and even just like farming out intelligence of other creatures because it has this low level awareness or like very loose connection with itself, and that it was growing in power, and the wild gods did this forgetting thing to keep everything in check. If that's the case, I was wondering, like, we have played with the idea of the forgetting being something that also affects people on a regular, like a consistent basis, like sort of like fallout or something from this event. Like a person may just forget a minor thing, like the color of their eyes, or, you know, the last time they got their haircut or something. And it may not happen very frequently. You might only forget one thing every few months or something, and it usually is pretty minor, but sometimes it can be something more major. Like, you can be out hunting and forget where you live, or that you even have a hold. You might forget 6 years of your own life or something like that. And I thought this could be a really interesting element to play with. But first of all, let's start with that. What do you think of the idea that this was like an event that was caused by a person? Do you think it's corruption sourced, or do you think it was a way of dealing with the corruption, or do you think it's maybe something else entirely?
I don't think the corruption will be the cause. I don't think that's the case.
I'm a fan of the narrative explanation that a bad thing happens to prevent a worse thing from happening, especially when it creates like potentially compromised morals, depending on the way you look at it. I think that there's a lot that we can do with that, and that creates a lot of conflict with people who view the wild gods as these protectors. I'm leaning towards wild gods being the culprits behind causing the forgetting to happen.
Cause some havoc, make people forget things, modify memory. Well, makes sense.
Yeah, and also quite literally, the alluvium, one of the side effects of it is when you come back, you literally forget shit. And I can't believe that I went this long without remembering that that's a thing that can happen. Is like, you roll a saving throw, and if you fail the saving throw, don't you like forget everything that happened in the alluvium or in the Feywild in the world of D&D? How did we? Did you remember that? I just straight up forgot.
I just didn't make the connection.
Yeah, I knew
there was a thing, but I just didn't make the connection.
Maybe it was an Elder Fae thing, because I was also playing with this too. Like, there's by no means like a consistency in the interests or goals of the Alluvium. That's sort of its whole thing. Is that like everybody's their own person, even the wild gods. While they have set aside some differences in things, it's for this one campaign that they're pushing against the corruption. So, you willing to play in that space for the time being? Like, what if the wild gods did, or like an Elder Fae or something like that? I think it's interesting, the idea of an Elder Fae. I think that they have sort of this Gandalfian presence where they don't express their power very frequently, but when they do, it has cataclysmic, like world-changing levels of impact, and otherwise they're just kind of there.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't necessarily connect that with Gandalf, but
I guess I should say, I don't think that Gandalf is not, like, he's powerful. You've convinced me of this. I think that he is a powerful wizard. But, I mean, he also just hangs out with hobbits and stuff. And I could totally see an Elder Fae just being, like, chilling out, because what's the point of life if you're constantly trying to fight world-ending shit all the time? You know, use your power for good reasons.
Yeah, I like to think that maybe the Elder Fae doesn't... Like, he is very, very powerful, but he doesn't like using his power because he thinks it's kind of... it's boring. Because he's like, you know, I did that, like, you know, 20,000 years ago, and that was boring.
Yeah. Or it's a wisdom thing, you know, like there's no point in I wasted the first 10,000 years of my life intervening in the affairs of mortals, and I'm done with it, because like there's just no fixing them. They just keep on getting more of them. I don't know where they're coming from all the time. I don't have genitals, but like, damn, they just don't stop. You fix problems and then turn around, and 80 years later, all of a sudden they have the same problems again.
So this is so I have an idea for you. Are you ready? The forgetting is caused by the world gods. I'll accept this. If we also say this, everyone thinks it's caused by the corruption, but it's not. Mm-hmm. And occasionally people will hear this cacophony of voices in their heads. And it is almost always seen as a sign that this person is chosen as a representative of all of the wild gods.
The cacophony of voices?
Yeah. So basically what I'm saying is the stuff that's the corruption is being mistaken for the wild gods. And yep. The stuff that's the wild gods is being mistaken for the corruption.
Because it sounds, oh, because dude, you could play with the idea that like, I heard the voice of the Illuvium, or Ilvaru, as I think the word that I've been playing with is being sort of like a modification for the people of Orun. How do you feel about Ilvaru, first of all? Are you cool with that?
Sure. It sounds good.
So like they're like, I heard the voice of Ilvaru, as in almost in the same way that you talk about the ethereal realms having the bodies like the animus and stuff. Like they might talk about Ilvaru as though it was like sort of its own living creature. And what they're hearing is the mad cacophony of thousands of different animals and things that were corrupted beings all happening at the same time. But it's like, oh, like it was the, you know, the forest came alive for me.
Yep.
You know, and sometimes they hear like a calling in that. And I mean, dude, you could have the entire druidic order like based on this. And like some arch druids know the truth because they actually are in connection with the wild gods. Because I think we talked about the
druids are chosen by the wild gods.
I think druids are actually chosen by the wild gods. I think those that seek the druids out likely do so because they hear the voice of Ilvaru and believe like, oh, you know, this is a this is my calling. I have been called. And sometimes those people actually get inducted into the druidic order, but not because like they're actually chosen, but basically because the druids have consulted with their wild god patrons or whatever and have agreed on the fact that these people are too dangerous to leave out in the world. And like they're brought in as like a, you know, hey, welcome greeting, but they're always treated differently by the highest ups. And there's almost like a sort of a black spot on them that they can't get rid of.
And occasionally there might be the classic meme where the person is taken out and they're like, wait a second, all these voices in my head, it's the corruption. And then the person puts the gun to the back of their head and says,
always has, always been. Has been,
always will be. And then they kill them.
Good meme, man. Good use of the meme. I like that. So, okay. Here's kind of, all right, so we've got the forgetting, maybe caused by an Elder Fae, maybe caused by the wild gods, but it was a thing that they did because they wanted to stop the corruption. So this maybe insinuates that at some point the corruption grows in strength. Maybe we can kind of play with the idea that during the time of Avum Secunda, nothing was really present in the corruption because, I don't know, maybe it didn't have anything to feed on, or maybe it did. Maybe that entire realm was completely overrun by it. And I mean, dude, maybe that's where you get dinosaurs from. Maybe what if all dinosaurs descended from dragons, and instead of being like proto-drakes or whatever, as they evacuated from the core, some were killed. And the corruption took their bodies and animated them, and like over generations and thousands of years, tens of thousands of years, you know, sort of like reductions of dragon kind took all these different manifest forms and became like the reptilian monsters that we know and love today in Orun that are great for monster hunting.
Yep.
Okay, that's a fun origin story.
Well, I think we need to tie the forgetting and how it destroyed or how it stopped or made better the corruption.
Yeah. I think here's the thing. I don't think it was a permanent solution. I think it was took several thousand years for it to be a problem kind of solution. But
I have something to put forward.
Yeah. What's your idea?
All right. I think the forgetting is not actually what's happening. Or shall we say, that's not the intent. It's not to make people forget. Mm-hmm. That's the side effect.
Mm,
what's actually okay. going on is that the part of the soul or the mind or whatever we want to point out that is being tainted by corruption is being cleansed, and a part of that cleansing is this shit's gotta go.
That's
you're cutting off the gangrenous limb.
That's really cool. Dude, that is fucking clever as shit, man. That is good. That is good ideas right there. That is good ideas. Always has been.
Always will.
Okay, so then, so in a practical sense, what's happening there? Is it an agent of Ilvaru, agent of the wild gods that is literally passing over people and like notices things and like almost like the tooth fairy is plucking out like, you know, rotten teeth or whatever from your mind? That's a weird image. Like these rotten thoughts, and that sometimes happens. And there's like these, if sages were to observe and to record in a way that would be distinctly un-Orunian, because mass information is not available in the same way that sort of like information is passed on from generation to generation. If you're to do in a scientific experiment, would an entire region experience similar forgetting at the same time? Is that kind of what you're imagining? Is almost like a wave passes out over and like whatever was corrupted, it gets like cleansed?
I think that was the beginning. But I think now it's much less potent. And I think the druids, a part of their job is to run around. And do you know what Gandalf does to Bilbo's door?
Doesn't he like blast it open, or he just shows up on the other side or something?
I feel like
he does a few things.
He talks to Bilbo and he's like, I'm looking for someone to go on an adventure. And Bilbo's like, excuse me, fuck off. And then he's like,
who the fuck are you?
And he's like, I think you'll like it. And Bilbo's like, excuse me, fuck off. And so then Gandalf draws a rune on his door so the dwarves know where to go.
I mean, is there something magical supposed to be happening here? Because it's literally just like...
No, it's just Gandalf drawing something on a door.
Just like pointing an arrow down and saying free beer or whatever.
Exactly. But what I'm getting at here is I think that you have one of the jobs of some druids is to go and like, and you know, this is a traveling druid who does services and is seen by people and helps people and then is on the lookout for the corruption and sees corrupted individuals and draws a mark on the door. Or on the, you know, corner of the, you know, street, whatever, wherever it is, it's going to get the attention of whatever fucking fey pixies. It's going to knock them up with pixie juice. Or dust, or whatever. That's my suggestion.
So maybe there's like, yeah, like spiritual creatures that manifest and are literally like tooth fairy tales that people tell that will show up and bring the forgetting then?
Well, this is the interesting thing, is that I don't want to tie the tooth fairies with the forgetting. I don't think people make that connection.
So then, but like, if you get visited, oh, but you know what? You would never know that you were visited because they're going to make you forget.
It's true.
I mean, I guess we could do that. I don't know. If we're talking about symptomatic here, that's not really the side effect we're talking about because it's modifying memories, not current experiences. But I don't know. I feel like we could do some loose fun there. But ultimately, I do, okay, however it manifests, I don't know if I love the idea of literal, like, tooth fairies, although I think it's super fun. Like, yeah. I think it's a really fun idea. I think,
how about this?
We'll put a pin in that for
now. We can say yes and. We can say yes, there are these tooth fairies, and they're uncommon. It's normally druids casting big spells or something like this.
Here is a more like a science-y approach that I was
okay.
thinking about. Tell me what you think of this.
They put fluoride in the water.
No. the pixies, first of all, I actually really do like that idea, and I think that's fun, and we should hold on to that and do something with that, because I think that it's got the germ of a really great implementation. God, that's so fun. Literal tooth fairies, but not really. Brain fairies.
Fairies?
Sure. I'll give it to you because I'm drinking a highball. But here was the idea that I had. What do you know about wave dynamics?
No.
No? What do you mean?
I don't know anything about wave dynamics.
Oh, okay. I thought you were just like being like, we're not doing anything tonight. Okay. If you have a pond, and let's say it's not perfectly circled because most ponds aren't, and it has sort of like a lozenge shape and stuff.
Okay.
If you drop a single a drop of water into
that
pond.
You know what a lozenge shape is?
Okay, it's not lozenge shaped. It's like lima bean or whatever.
A lozenge is a diamond.
You hush. Not all, okay, but like also you have lozenges that you like suck on.
Yeah, but it's because they're originally diamond shaped.
What? No.
Why do you think they're called a
lozenge?
Lozenges
were originally...
They were lozenge shaped. I'll show you.
All right, well, I do remember that there's... But hey, I've read textbooks that referred to lozenges, and they weren't referring to, they were saying like basically a flat O.
I'll read it for you. A noun, the word lozenge, a rhombus or diamond shape, or a small medicinal tablet originally in the shape of a lozenge.
All right, I'll take that one. We've also had this conversation before, and thank you for the reminder. But I got to finish what I was talking about.
Yes. They very, very strangely shaped lozenge pond.
Lima bean shaped pond then. But it's unequal. It's not a perfect circle. If you drop a drop of water in there, the waves, as they ripple outwards, travel at the same speed towards all of the edges of the pond, but some reach there before others. Now, if you don't have degradation in the wave, i.e. having to do with viscosity and specific gravity and friction, obviously, and just gravity as well, plain old gravity, then that wave hypothetically could continue forever, right? As that wave reaches one side faster than the other, the way that it bounces back off of it, like, you know, following sort of literally like a sine curve, is that it will start to cascade and it will add up the magnitude at certain points of the wave and not at other points. If you're confused about all of this as like a listener, just go ahead and look up like wave physics or something on YouTube. Don't worry. Like, it's not super complicated. You can watch a 10-second video, know exactly what I'm talking about. If you have a mind's eye, you probably already do. But my thought is what if the initial wave of the forgetting was this massive, literally like a drop dropping into some medium. I don't know, maybe it's the noosphere, so like Skyris or something. And it's dropped into it, and as it cascades outwards, everybody forgets everything. But as it bounces around in this sort of psychic space, it starts to... I don't know if it's bouncing off of things or what the sort of like unequalness is, but it starts to create essentially wave dynamics where as the wave returns and quote unquote washes over your mind, you have imperfect parts of your mind that get removed. I think it still could be the parts that are the like corrupted with the forgetting. I still like that idea that it's like taking foot. So maybe it's just that it washes over you and whatever it washes away is parts of the corruption. And so it's this sort of, I mean, it could literally be an age spell or whatever. I mean, pull that one out from way back in the day, you know, that is still occurring and is maybe like perpetually occurring and feeding off of the magic of the land or something somehow. What if that's part of why magic works weirdly in Orun? Is the fact that there's this spell that is constantly siphoning energy, latent energy from the world or something. And so, for instance, conductors, people who are born conductors don't have access to magical power, or it's specifically associated with the forgetting because that latent energy, or you could do something with binders or something. I don't know.
I don't think we should go that far. Because there are plenty of places in Everest where there's a lot of fucking enchantments around, and I don't want to, you know, have to have players deal with like, oh, the magic is weaker here because of
your magic just doesn't work here, or you can't access your highest level spell slots or whatever.
Yeah, that's just not fun.
Yeah, if you're doing that, you're doing it for like a specific narrative reason, and you have to broadcast that stuff to your players. These are lessons that I've learned. Okay.
Don't hoodwink them.
Yeah. So we've talked about a lot of things, and I feel like we've only just begun, which is kind of unfortunate. I think we're just going to, I mean, maybe we just make this a sort of a finale series, because
yeah,
I can see this going well past two episodes, and we've got a lot to work out here. And I don't think we've, I think we've basically just started to lay the groundwork without even really drawing it together yet.
I feel like we might need to have one of those murder maps.
Murder maps?
You know, the, like the murder,
what are you
like,
talking about?
Cork board with like the red lines tying all the pictures
together. Oh, yeah, like, yeah, yeah. That's basically my mind at all times. If it ever, you know, if somebody ever like turned, yeah, that's the sound of and a light being turned.
And there's like the thing, there's like one table in the room off in a corner, and there's like no chairs. And then like on that table,
single just, light bulb hanging.
Yeah. And it's swinging and constant perpetual yeah motion.
Just very slowly swinging back
on,
and forth.
On the table is just like an ashtray that's like filled completely with just cigarettes.
That's very good. That's very good. I don't think it's yet time for one and one, because I want to at least bring a couple of these elements together, but I do think we're getting close.
Also, by the way,
if you got a couple of minutes in you.
I did find some software that is actually murder board.
Software. Yeah?
I'll send it to you.
I mean, I just use mind maps. It's a lot faster, and I don't have to like use images or whatever.
All right. I'll pass along anyway.
Yeah, share it with me. You know, who knows? Maybe I'll make some use of it.
It's not free.
Oh, okay.
That's how you know it's good, Frank.
Oh, I didn't even say the thing.
What thing?
The thing that you took issue with for good reason, but
you
I still am sticking to. Because I think that also plays a part here. I was playing with this idea.
Frank, maybe you should save it for part two.
Maybe it's a teaser for part two, because I don't know how everything connects here, but I'm everything's still brewing under the surface here, but I do want to lay it down. So I had this idea based on what we talked about with Mistborn. One of the things that's really interesting that gets dropped into the story that is a really intriguing idea is the idea of altered prophecies. So what happens if a god can literally change what is written, or a godlike being? I mean, let's just be honest. I think it's fair to say if Ruin isn't a god, they're a godlike being. Is it he? I think they literally even gendered him.
It is.
Although, Vin towards the end, she like basically removed his gender because she's like, oh, he doesn't deserve that. Which, I don't know, politics, gender politics. Not really sure what to taste out of that one. I'm not gonna really try and dive in there. We would have to like create a whole separate podcast for that. But the basically the idea is that anything that is written down, Ruin can alter. And so basically, Ruin got trapped and needed to get free. And in order to get free from the cage, they couldn't really do it on their own, so they had to have a mortal being come in and free them intentionally. And so they started altering prophecies to get people to come to the place where Ruin could be freed from. To basically say that this person will like save the world or whatever. So anybody who thought that they were capable of doing it, you know, tried to make it happen. And that idea must have been bouncing around in my head because they start, because then they introduce in the end of book two and in book three that if you write something down in metal, if you basically beat it into a metal plate or chisel it into like a piece of tin or something like that, the message can't be read. And the reason why is because Ruin basically is blinded by metal. Anything that they look at, or the way that they were sort of manifesting this experience, the sensorial experience of Ruin gazing at metal or taking it in, it can't ratify metal. And so anything that is encased in metal or is inscribed in metal, like Ruin can't interact with or understand. And I was playing with the idea of, what if that's all the gods? Not about metal, but about written things. What if they can't read language? Because one of the things that we talked about was the uniqueness of free will and the fact that basically all of the world was like, all of the multiverse or like of the cosmic realms was like the many different parts of the machine necessary to create the Materium. And even the Materium, it's in and of itself was essentially a forge. If you take it from the limited perspective of like the creation of sentient creatures, all of that being a forge through which Own could prepare and test and create creatures capable of having free will. And this being sort of almost like, in some ways, the focal point of all creation up until that point. The giants were liminal. They were on the horizon, the twilight's edge of free will. They were like, I don't know, I kind of compare them to Westworld. I am so fascinated with Westworld as a topic. And the idea of spoilers for Westworld. The problem isn't that they are too simple. The problem is that they're too complex. They're more complex than human beings. Their minds are more like they're greater and more capable. In that for every like one line of code that writes a human's soul and like makes sense of like how to capture a human's identity, it's like there's 600 lines for
a host.
Yeah, for a host, which is such an interesting idea to play with, is just a complete inversion. But let's just say like the giants were like a simplified version of free will. And, you know, everything we've played with the elements, I think, leans towards that. If that's the case, it would follow. And I'm really into the idea of having these highly simplified runes that the giants use to express different sentiments and feelings and thoughts and things. And, you know, maybe have more than just like the however many are in Storm King's Thunder and stuff. But maybe each one of them had to kind of be learned and taught and is an expression of many different things. And a lot of that is like almost a language that relies on only having a couple thousand words, if that, like maybe even less, like a few hundred at most. And most of them aren't used. And it's the context in which they're used or the way that they're written or with like the amount of intensity or something that determines how the word is meant to be felt. And it's used to display like simplistic concepts. As that then manifests into complicated language, because that's sort of just naturally arising out of the consciousness of giants, as it becomes more complex, as you bring in the humans and the first ones, the Docimi, etc. What if, and this was my argument to Carter, was that the way that this would work is because free will is something that's actually only possibly afforded to mortals, I think it actually doesn't make a lot of sense for the gods to have free will. I would covet your thoughts on this too. You know, I do want to know what you're thinking. But I don't think that they have free will, and I don't think it actually makes a lot of sense for them to have free will because they are forces of nature, essentially. They are meant to embody one thing and one thing in its fullness. And because they may as well have essentially perfect memory, they would A, have no need for language, and B,
you mean they,
written language, I should say, and specifically writing, and B, maybe they couldn't ratify it because I don't know if they have minds in the same way that mortal creatures have minds. So we talked about Skyris and the idea of Skyris, and I think the way that I was explaining this, the way that was making sense to me, was that Skyris, which if you haven't heard us talk about that concept aside from earlier in this episode, it's essentially just the newer spirit is like the cognitive overlay. It's one of those, what do we call them? Half realms or whatever? Demiplanes?
Contour
realms. Demiplane. Contour realm. Thank you. That's very good. It's a contour realm that lays on top of reality. It's not its own place, but it is a place more or less that you can use to describe the way that things are. And in Skyris is where language resides, because it is, if all you can see is you look at the world and you don't know the languages because your mind doesn't have access to Skyris in the same way, then you just see scribbles on a page, and it's like having dyslexia, or my extremely reductive explanation of what dyslexia is, because I don't have it. I don't know. But like that, they're just scribbles to you. They don't mean anything. You have to have the knowledge of the language, the connection to it, the association that when you look at that thing, it is imbued with meaning. And then that meaning is shared with other individuals who also recognize it and can then extract that meaning from it. So in other words, it's almost like that knowledge that is imbued in the language, the way that I'm describing it in this moment, again, this is the hypothesis or the way that I'm looking at it, is built into Skyris, not into the Materium. It's in a contour realm. And when a person looks at it, it's their mind accessing that thing in Skyris and saying, ah, I connected that with that, and I'm like making sense of that language. And the gods, like if the gods didn't have access to Skyris, then they couldn't read thoughts and they couldn't read like written language. And why am I saying all of this? What is the point of me bringing up any of this? Is I think it has an association with the forgetting. I don't know what that association is yet, but I think that the wild gods and the fact that writing exists and that runes are such an important part of Arunian structure of like culture, the way that people make sense of things and record them and have sort of almost bastardized or inherited a manifestation of the runes and use them for their own like means where they like inscribe their own family structure and like their lineage and modify runes or do take inspiration from them. I think all of this stuff is associated somehow. Anyways, that's my spiel. I don't know. Carter, I think you make some really good points as to why, like, you know, you were more hesitant. I don't know if you wanted to voice any of that stuff now, but it is definitely stuff I'd want to talk about or make sense of.
I think we can save it for later.
That's a lot.
I will leave you and the audience with this idea, Frank.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, does this apply to the avatar of a god? Bam.
Oh.
And don't answer that. Good. Don't answer that.
No, I'm not gonna. I'll just elaborate for the listener. If you don't know what an avatar is, or I think we've actually, well, no, aspect is a different thing. If you don't know what an avatar is, it's basically like when a god decides to use their incredibly unlimited but also highly bottlenecked power to manifest a corporeal form, maybe corporeal, maybe Gnostic, you know, depending on their intent and, you know, amount of power they want to imbue, like a limited form in which they can interact with on some levels the material world. That is super interesting because, like, what's the association with Skyris and free will? Is it possible for a god to create and then inhabit a body that maybe has free will? Is that necessary to experience Skyris? Do creatures without souls have free will? I think yes. I think that it's a separate thing. Like, you know, you can be a Riven and I think still have free will. But does that mean you have, because, you know, and because some of those have access to very significant aspects of Skyris. And it's like, I don't know. There's some really, that's a really interesting question, dude. Oh, man.
I think it's a good thing to leave our listeners on.
I think so. Plus, it is getting late and I do need to sleep soon. Oh man, wow. All right. I don't know. Do you have a one in one?
I just gave you my one.
Oh, that's a very good one. Okay. I think my one. Ah, I still didn't draw any of those connections together. Oh man, I feel like something is really under the surface here. I feel like we're on the verge of some significant, like, cognitive breakthrough that's gonna just blow this puppy wide open.
You need to start smoking cigarettes and you need to get your murder board.
Yeah. I this isn't the one, but I do want to just reiterate all this stuff about the idea of like edge of the world land and like that being the edge of a rune. I am so enjoying the idea of, especially because you might still have the relatively hexagonal mapping of a rune, and so it's just like weirdly mapped. It's like when the textures get like super stretched out over something in WoW and they like look super like cheesy because they're not supposed to go that vertical. But yeah, like I think that there's maybe a potential for something to be done with that scar. I don't know. Anyways, I think that might be it.
Take us out.
Okay, well, we hope you've enjoyed this exploration into the lands of Arun and the realms beyond, one of the last of the few, at least for now. If you've enjoyed listening, you can give the Lore Keepers a 5-star rating on iTunes or any other podcasting platform, wherever you're listening to us, or better yet, you can tell others about us. Again, still in the land of COVID, so everything is bullshit, but... you know, you might get a chance to tell a person that you probably shouldn't be seeing physically at a bar or whatever. But, you know, fuck it. We tried nothing and we're all out of ideas, so.
Jesus Christ, Frank. I can smell the salt coming off you. Just because
it's... Can you also smell the scotch from my highball? I'm amazed that it's always lasted this long. I thought I would have finished it by now.
Just because it's the end of the show, Frank, doesn't mean the highball stops being drunk. Check out our subreddit, the perfect place to find resources, ask questions, make your mark, heart the discourse. You can also reach us at Lorekeepers on Twitter or email us at lorekeeperspodcast@gmail.com. And speaking of the Reddit, Frank.
Yes, tell me, Carter.
We had some interesting ideas come through about seasons after Over. So keep them coming. Overrun's not done yet. There's still time to get your ideas in. Email us, tweet at us, put it on the subreddit. We'll read it, and we will think about it.
You stole the words out of my mouth, and I was going to go right there. Just wanted to recognize a couple of cool ideas. They did mention the floating continent, which we literally started, I think, like an episode or two before deciding to do Overrun, which is kind of just like such a cock tease. Or also doing a heroes and villains mill, which could be really cool instead of doing a god mill. What were some of the other ones? The monster mill, doing a monster mill each week. Somebody, I think, made a comment.
It's a graveyard mill.
About doing... what did they say? They said something along the lines of like, hey, what if you did all the flora and fauna? And just like talked about shit that existed in Halume, and I thought, I was like, man, that'd be a great idea. I don't know how good I would do at that. You know, we tried that one time, and honestly, as an Aphant, it's like a real thing, like a real barrier to try and visualize and try and get into the helping people visualize Halume, which is really unfortunate because I am in the 2% here. But I'm not against it. I'm not against the idea. It might be a way of shoring up that weakness, especially if you were, you know, were willing to take the lead, Carter.
Yeah, we could see about that. It's in the barrel.
Yeah. Anyway, so like, definitely we are considering all these ones. Keep them coming. These have been some great ideas. We're definitely like chewing on them, seeing what we can do with them. But for now, we are going to finally thank Josh Scotch Highball for his composition of Land of Heroes Silker, the Lore Keeper's theme, and thanks to you all for listening. Until next time.
Until next time.
Wow, Highball really hit all at once, huh?
Until next time, don't forget, there are always more highballs to drink.
Jesus Christ.
Bye, everybody.
Goodbye, everyone. Have a good day, probably. We love you all. Stay safe. Amen.
Let it be, let it be, let it be, oh, let it be. Speaking words of Halume, this is so out of tune.